Gobble Gobble on this Thanksgiving week episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. We'll hear about liberal cities losing battles in the courts. We'll get an update from the Capitol on State Rep. Dennis Bonin's first week as the presumptive next speaker. In our interview, we talked to Texas GOP Chairman James Dickey about what the Republican Party's doing to prepare for the upcoming legislative session. And we'll close with a commentary from Michael Quinn Sullivan. He'll share some history about the true origin of Thanksgiving. Coming to you from the 1836 studios in Austin, Texas, this is Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald. You can find me on Twitter at TweetTonyMac. Find the show on the web, www.texasscorecard.com. If you like the show, you want to subscribe, never miss an episode, you can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, or Stitcher. Now, we're on Stitcher. Get started with this week's news roundup with our Central Texas Bureau. I've got Jacob Asmussen in. The city of Austin, like a lot of these liberal city councils around the state, wanting to make policy that they don't have the authority to do, and they're getting a little bit of a smackdown in the courts.
They are, Tony. You know, if Austin's new paid sick leave law was the flu, then working Austinites finally got some strong medicine. On Friday, Texas Third Court of Appeals issued an order preventing Austin's new mandatory paid sick leave law from taking effect. And so what this law did is it mandated all employers within the city limits to provide at least 6 to 8 days of paid sick time off per year for their employees.
Yeah, and this was, kind of like for everybody. So, that's a lot of days every year. Look, the elections, some people look at the elections, they go, whew, well, that didn't go as well as we wanted. Yeah, except Republicans won statewide. Republicans keep the legislature. They control all these things. So you should be seeing conservative policy, but you see this very liberal policy being pushed in some of the cities, like Austin.
They are, Tony. And, they're doing it despite so much evidence out there that these policies don't work. This whole mandatory paid sick leave idea has been proven over and over again to not work. There was a report by the Freedom Foundation which examined 10 different studies of this kind of law in cities across the country, and they saw the same trend of consequences in all the cities. They saw employees losing hours, working hours. They saw them losing vacation time and even their jobs.
Yeah. It has the negative effects that you expect, similar to minimum wage things. We're very well-meaning. Ooh, let's raise everybody wages. Well, they get fired because they can't afford to keep those jobs around. As the city of Austin losing on the front end of this suit, the Court of Appeals ruling and giving an injunction there, stopping the paid sick leave ordinance, they're going to court as well from the U.S. Pastors Council because they're violating other employers' religious liberty.
They're taking it on every front, Tony. The U.S. Pastor Council is suing the city because the city currently has a law that requires employers to consider job applicants based on sexual orientation and gender identity. So this essentially means a church would be violating the law if they refused to hire a pastor or church employee that practiced a homosexual or transgender lifestyle.
Yeah, so you have the city stepping in to say, we're going to make laws that apply to employers in our city limits, the kinds of things that you might expect a state legislature to pass. Here, the city council, again, trying to make this broad-based policy, but they're not even doing that. Just that. They're not even putting in the religious exemptions one would expect in these kinds of ordinances.
That's right, Tony. The Austin mayor, Steve Adler, said he will staunchly defend this discrimination law because he said everybody ought to feel safe and protected. Well, that seems it's everybody except churches who disagree with the city hall.
Safety and protection, except if you're a church and you want to hire a pastor who agrees with your religious point of view, which is fundamental freedom of religion, they're not protected under this ordinance. They would be required, they could be sued, they could be badgered by some left-wing activists. I don't understand where this ends.
it doesn't. There's no stopping this once you make exceptions for some. And so we should provide and respect the church's religious liberty.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting following. There's always craziness coming out of the Austin City Council. You get to do the job of covering that and covering how the state responds to that kind of crazy policy. So appreciate your reporting on it.
Thanks, Tony.
Next, let's check in on the turkeys at the Capitol for that and talk to Capitol Bureau Chief Brandon Waltons. Brandon, you and I broke down last week in kind of real detail the ascendancy, the likely victory of State Rep Dennis Bonin to become the next Speaker of the Texas House. Looks pretty certain that he's headed to victory in January. But a lot of developments over the last week or so that maybe we can read the tea leaves a little bit and see what kind of speaker he might be.
Well, a lot happening, right? In just a couple weeks in the Capitol here, you had State Rep Dennis Bonin, who's become the presumptive, next Speaker of the House. He's released that he's got 109 signatures, vast majority. Of course, we won't have that vote until later on, but presumptive Speaker, having a phone call, apparently, a little bit of a meeting with Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. And after this meeting, apparently they talked a little bit about, what they could expect with their working relationship and policies and such for the next session. The two of them putting out a joint statement after that, and the tone of that looking very, very different than the relationship we saw between Speaker Strauss and Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick.
Yeah, outgoing Speaker Joe Strauss, very liberal Republican, kind of confessed recently to voting for Democrats, voting for Beto. I mean, this is a guy, he's not really a traditional Republican, but had a really nasty relationship with Dan Patrick. I think I've heard that they basically never talked except for, extenuating circumstances.
Yes. And so what you had in this joint statement was a big departure from that. You actually had both parties saying, you had Dan Patrick saying that he was looking forward to working with Bonin to make it the best session ever, I think was their words. But more importantly, you had Bonin himself saying that he was looking forward to working with the Senate and working with Dan Patrick in order to move their agenda forward.
Yeah, some Democrats out there a little upset about this, saying, we're no longer going to have this obstructionist there. And so I guess maybe that's a really good sign. Also kind of getting down to brass tacks over this week, yeah. Dennis Bonin announcing a few personnel hires. But one big thing, appointing a work group to consider a new parliamentarian for the House.
And this was one of the first things he did after that press conference a couple weeks ago, is he organized this work group. It's got five Republicans and five Democrats from the House, and they're going to work together to essentially do the job search for the next parliamentarian of the Texas House.
Yeah, this is an interesting sign. One of the big criticisms under Strauss was that he was using the rules and using the process to stomp on the conservative minority, but also the Democrats were upset about this too. They didn't like a lot of the procedural rulings that were a bit dictatorial. And so interesting to see this committee appointed to say, well, maybe we're going to look at hiring someone new for that position.
Yes, and you saw under Speaker Strauss that not only did he disregard the rules often, not recognize certain motions, angering a lot of members, but he was enabled in that by his parliamentarians. I mean, these are the people that are sitting up there right with him, the gavel, and kind of giving him the green light or steering him on how to navigate the rules. Talking to some members after this announcement was made, a lot of them are very excited because one of the chief criticisms of Strauss, of which there are many, but one of the chief ones was not necessarily his liberal ideology, which was often a problem, but it was the fact that he let that impact how he would enforce the rules, what amendments, what motions he allowed to be brought up.
He would decide what was good, right? And then if he thought it was good enough, well, then you could have that motion laid out, and that's just simply not how the process is supposed to work. So I guess this committee, good indication that they're taking that issue seriously. When will we know more? I guess we've got a couple more weeks until this caucus vote.
A couple weeks until the caucus vote. Caucus vote amongst Republicans is December 1st, and then the official vote for Speaker of the House will be one of the first votes taken when the legislature reconvenes on January 8th.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's great to welcome on Texas Scorecard Radio this week, James Dickey, chairman of the Republican Party of Texas. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, I wanted to have you on to talk as we're leading up to the 86th Texas legislature, the 2019 Texas legislative session. I wanted to talk a little bit about what the party is doing to prepare for that and what the party is going to be doing to advance Republican principles and priorities in the legislative session. So it's kind of great we get to talk to the guy in charge over there and just tell us a little bit about what y'all are thinking and what you're doing now.
Well, thank you very much. Well, the first thing we're doing is the same thing that we did before the special session last year. I have reached out. We are reaching out to the speaker. Well, the. A potential speaker.
Yeah, Dennis Bonin, who kind of seems right. to have the inside track on being the next speaker.
Exactly. And the lieutenant governor's office and the governor's office to talk with them about our legislative priorities and our platform and our party's firm stance to help any legislator. And I've been calling all of our legislators to congratulate them on their victories or provide condolences for those who did not win. But in those calls about those victories, I am clearly offering that if they have bills that they are promoting or writing or sponsoring or that come before their committee that comes up this session that is backed and supported by the platform, then we would be more than happy to help get interested Texas Republicans there to speak up and our members to get there to speak up on behalf of the platform and on behalf of the Republican Party.
Yeah, to work together on these things. You know, I think it's interesting coming out of the elections. Obviously, a lot of Republicans are disappointed, or at least a mix of relief and disappointment, depending on how you look at various election results. But, you know, the reality is we've got all Republican statewide elected officials. We've got a Republican House of Representatives, a Republican Senate. It's the same as it ever was in terms of Republican dominance of the legislative process in this state. And so the way I look at it, I think we have the same, you know, it's not a different new golden opportunity, but it's the same golden opportunity that we've had for a long time to say, this is the opportunity right now to advance Republican priorities. Do you agree?
Yeah, I have, of course, been warning people that, you know, unless we take the threat seriously and unless we work hard and really change things up, it is a concerned way, but in particularly urban and suburban areas are against us and have been against us, and I am worried about 2020. But no question, if I had to choose between being the chair of the Texas Democrat Party or the Texas Republican Party, I would much, much, much rather be in the seat of the Republican Party, not just because it aligns with all my goals and principles, but because we're in a better position. And we do not take for granted that it was a massive thing that we won every single statewide position for the 12th election in a row. That is a big, big victory that we should acknowledge while also making sure that, you know, we don't take anything for granted and we work towards 2020. And I think a big part of working towards 2020 is giving every statewide elected official and our legislator a lot that they can go home and be proud of and brag about.
That's right.
The promises that were kept during the legislative session.
It is a good thing. I mean, you say, look, you'd rather be in the position of being the chair of the Republican Party versus the Democratic Party. Well, part of that is, you know, our policies, conservative policies, work when they're passed. They if you pass them, people receive them, and of course, like any legislation, you know, there's fear mongering and everything on the front end, and then it goes into effect, and it's like the tax cuts. Oh man, these things are going to be bad. Well, everybody loves the tax cuts. They're exactly. Seeing the results of those kind of things. So I think we have an opportunity to go out and pass things that not only improve the state and take advantage of the opportunity we have, but that would actually help ensure Republican victories down the line. So what I wanted to talk about, let's talk a little bit specifically of what the party is advancing. The party has had a platform for forever, right? You know, it always has a platform. Yep. And, you know, the history on that, notorious, is people said, oh, well, you know, okay, they passed this thing. Nobody pays attention to it. In the last few years, the party's been doing more and more to say, hey, we want to actually take these. We want to define legislative priorities. We want to go advance these. And what we've seen since you've been elected as chairman is what is apparent to me is a real commitment to actually making the platform and particularly the legislative priorities in the platform relevant and putting them in front of the legislators. So let's talk a little bit about what those are and what specifically the party is going to be doing headed into this session.
Sure. Well, and I'm excited about it, and I agree with you. We have done a lot of work to talk about this, but it's not in a vacuum, right? With the party exists to get Republicans elected, the Republican Party exists to get Republican election, but not just because it's cool to have a bunch of people in R, because we believe in our policies and we want to see those policies enacted. We also believe that it's a virtuous cycle, that as those policies are enacted, we get good results and makes it easier to elect Republicans. So it's not a choice between the two factors. The two really, really complement each other and help provide a victorious cycle, which is very important. But to your question, the top thing for us, of course, is our legislative priorities, and when we have a mandate from the convention to advance the legislative priorities specifically, and those are constitutional carry, which means that our God-given right to defend ourselves should not be infringed by a requirement that we get permission from the government to be able to be equipped.
We would never accept that we have to go get a permission slip to engage in a political rally or a permission slip to be secure in our homes from searches and seizures, or that we'd have to get pay a permit fee in order to have the right to a jury trial. There are jury fees, but the principle there is the same. Right. These are rights, not the privileges.
Exactly. And that it's a God-given right. It's not a Second Amendment right. It's a right protected by the Second Amendment, but it's a God-given right that we all have as individuals. And then
let's move through the list. What are the other priorities?
Ending taxpayer-funded lobbying, fighting for pro-life, with an ultimate goal of being able to do away with abortion, and then property tax reform, and then religious freedom and privacy. Those are our legislative priorities, and we will, of course, be fighting for those. And we're going to take proactive steps towards that. We've got a legislative priorities committee at the SREC that has almost 20 members dedicated to making sure that we get progress on these initiatives. And we know there have already been some bills filed. There have been a whole bunch of bills drafted. There's a lot of work already going on with members along those lines. But what I love, anytime somebody goes, oh my gosh, you guys are talking about the platform. There's a thing in there that I don't like. One of the great things about having 300 platform planks is I have no problem claiming with authority that no matter who the Republican elected is in Texas, any Republican elected official should be able to pick out an easy 10 or 20 items out of that 300 list that they would be happy to help us get passed.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's a long list. If you disagree here, why not agree on the things we do agree about and work together on those? So the party is organizing. Is that, I mean, are there ways that people actually can get involved? Because people are looking out there and they say, look, I know my property tax bill is high. I know that it keeps going up every year. That's a real problem. I know the party has said, hey, we want to, you know, ultimately get away from this property tax system to something else, to use excess revenue, to divert to different kinds of taxes, to do something different than this crushing property tax burden. So the party is representing my ideas, but what do I, as an individual, you know, Republican voter, do to actually help spur this effort forward?
Yeah, well, so there are a couple of things you can do on any of those. Of course, I always suggest on any of those issues that you are interested in. First, just introduce yourself to your legislator, and long before the time comes when you need to cajole them or confront them or in any other way, just have a positive interaction of how excited you are on working with them to advance these, you know, priorities that you care about. But on our website at texasgop.org, we have, and I always have to be careful because of, you know, it's not .com, it's texascop.org. on our website, we list our legislative priorities. We list the whole platform, and by all means, look through it and find the ones that excite you and get behind those, not because they're the only issues that you might care about, but because if you're involved in those, you'll have the support and encouragement of the platform behind you. And so all of a sudden, it's not just you, an activist, calling your legislator saying, I care about this thing. It's, I care about this thing that the whole convention said we ought to give up.
Yeah, and a lot of these things have been ballot propositions in the Republican primary, where you've got, you know, tens, hundreds of thousands of people saying, hey, I'm for this. And then, of course, the platform and the priorities approved by 5,000 plus, depending on the year, you know, presidential years, up to almost 10,000 people. Voting in these conventions, representing the whole of the state of Texas, saying that they're for these things. So I know that there's a provision on the website I'd seen where y'all were going in and giving more fleshed out detail about the priorities, and then kind of giving people some action items and things they can tweet, stuff like that. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes. So that's all part of our STAT team. And the STAT team is the Strategic Texas Action Team. And any activist who cares about these issues, they can go to texasgop.org/STAT, S-C-A-T. And there's a form they can fill out. And part of the form is, which of these issues do you care about? And then we code that properly so that as the session goes on, when there's an issue, when there's a bill, when there's a debate or a committee hearing or what have you that relates to that item, we email out or text out or both a heads up saying, hey, there's this thing coming up with this committee that is related to the issue that you said you cared about. If you want to make a difference, you know, now's the time.
Now's the time to act. Now's the time to make the phone calls and to do the activity. Well, that's really great. I'm running low on time, so running out. But before we finish up, plug it one last time. Let's get it the website in so folks know where to go and get connected.
The best place to connect for anyone who cares about issues in the Texas legislature, it's texasgop.org/stat, S-T-A-T. And you go there, you sign up, you can tell us which ones you're interested in, and we will keep you informed on those issues during session. You can be part of our amazing volunteer activist team, and that's what we do.
Great. Well, thank you for your leadership, and thank you for coming on and telling us a little bit about what y'all will be doing headed into 2019.
It is my pleasure. Thank you for having me. Thank you for everything you do.
Have you heard about the Texas Torchbearers Program? It's a program that makes activism fun and exciting. You can sign up at texastorchbearers.com.
There, you can learn about the easiest and most effective ways to engage your government officials in order to hold them accountable. As a Texas Torchbearer, you can earn cool prizes like an awesome pair of custom-fit cowboy boots with the Texas Torchbearer logo on it. As a promo, we gave away a beautiful custom-engraved Glock handgun. Sign up today at TexasTorchbearers.com. That's TexasTorchbearers with an S.com.
Well, Turkey Day is now upon us. In this week's commentary, Empower Texans CEO Michael Quinn Sullivan shares some thoughts and some history on why we should be thankful for free markets, property rights, and self-governance.
We think we know the story of Thanksgiving, that the pilgrims landed on Plymouth Rock, faced a harsh winter, famine, and disease, and then only with the help of friendly natives learned how to survive. It's nice for bedtime stories and feel-good paintings, but it ignores the most important lessons of our early history. I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan with this Texas Scorecard radio commentary. The pilgrims weren't city slickers ill-prepared for wilderness life, nor were they misguided about the challenges facing them in the New World. Sadly, the travails and trials of the pilgrims weren't the result of recklessness, ignorance, or chance. No, the problems the pilgrims faced and overcame were of their very own making through a well-intentioned, though misguided, governing ideology. William Bradford served as the governor of the Plymouth Colony. He recorded the early history of the colony himself in a work he titled The History of the Plymouth Settlement. Bradford wrote that even before arriving in the New World, he and his people imposed on themselves what he called communal service, what we today would recognize as socialism. Everything, the land, the work, the crops, everything was held communally. Everyone was expected to work hard and receive only what they truly needed. As a result, Bradford wrote, many would simply, and I'm quoting him here, allege weakness and inability, end quote. In his book, Bradford reported that while communal living sounded good in theory, its shortcomings were soon uncovered in practice. Listen to how Governor Bradford himself described it.
The young men who were most able and fit for service objected to being forced to spend their time and strength in working for other men's wives and children without any recompense.
They learned then what too many people don't understand even today. Socialism fails to acknowledge human nature and the power of incentives. As Bradford wrote,
the strong man or the resourceful man had no more share of food, clothes, etc., than the weak man who was not able to do a quarter the other could.
All of this communal service led to the community being fractured, not brought together. Bradford put it this way.
Community of property was found to breed much confusion and discontent.
No one had an incentive to work, so no one produced, and everyone was miserable. Remember, this was a small group of people who shared common values, cared for each other, and had willingly joined philosophically to the colony's arrangements. It's just that socialism fails in practice whenever it's tried. Sometimes it limps along, but ultimately the results are always the same. Socialism always produces misery. After 3 years, the colony abandoned its communal life lest they die off completely. Bradford wrote that colony leaders divided the land among the families. What this meant, he said, is that the new system
allowed each man to plant corn for his own household and to trust themselves for that.
The results were stunning, and the community turned around quickly. But here's how Bradford summarized the change.
It made all hands very industrious, so that much more corn was planted than otherwise would have been by any means the governor or any other could devise, and saved him a great deal of trouble, and gave far better satisfaction.
Private property rights and a free market carried the day. Labor was naturally divided, not politically imposed, with everyone doing what they could do best to their own benefit, and thereby increasing the productivity and happiness of the colony as a whole. In the newly free society, where the local knowledge of Native Americans was combined with the techniques of Europe, the pilgrims had a harvest bountiful beyond comparison. The very first days of the American experience demonstrated what world history has shown repeatedly. Socialism fails and fails miserably. Liberty, not government planning, produces bounty. We must daily remember that individual liberty is, in the 21st century, as it was in the 17th, a necessary and integral component to our general prosperity. And let us be thankful to God not only for the material things we have, but for the liberty of which He is the author. With a Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan, wishing you and yours a very happy Thanksgiving on behalf of the entire Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard team.
That's all the time we have for this week's program. Until next week, I wish each of you a happy Thanksgiving.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.